Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Francisco L. Borges and the Melville Charitable Trust.
Faith here with a welcome toast. It was somebody or other who said, "For when we lose 20 pounds, dear reader, we may be losing the 20 best pounds we have. We may be losing the pounds that contain our genius, our humanity, or love and honesty." Please feel free to consume this show podcast in small bites or eat the whole thing.
I got that sunshine in my pocket, got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops.
It's great to have you joining the party on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze, inviting you to eat, drink, and be merry with us. It's Chinese New Year, so we're going to go right into dumplings. We're going to go dumpling crazy, in other words. How to make them at home. It's easier than you think. We're going to talk about sheet pan dinners, how my friend Dawn made root vegetable soup. It was so delicious and so easy to do without dairy. It was really quite remarkable, and we found a good wine for you. This is one of those $10 a bottle. Can't wait to talk with you about that. My treasured food buddies are here. Senior contributors Chris Prosperi, Alex Province, Mark Raymond, and our senior producer, Robin Doyon Aiken. Hey, everybody.
Hey.
All right. I want to start with this because this is one of my favorite things. There is a woman, Ruth Benjamin, who lives in Marshall, Illinois. Hmm. And this past week, she turned 109.
Ooh. Ooh.
Wow.
Happy
good
birthday.
Genes.
She looks absolutely amazing. The doctor who makes house calls for her whenever she phones him said that she's obviously someone born with a beautiful immune system, good genes, but they asked Ruth, and he said, "My job is to do as little as I can to interrupt this beautiful flow of her life," which I adore.
Absolutely.
But I'm bringing her up on the show not only because it's really pretty terrific just to hear about her, but her doctor said, you know, hard work, a loving family, a wonderful marriage, and she never drank, she never smoked, but she was happy in her life. And I think that is part of the key to her longevity. But when they asked Ruth Benjamin what she thought was the key to her longevity, she said, "I have potatoes some way every day, and I love kraut, and I love bacon."
It's the bacon thing.
Bacon.
I always knew it.
They say it's dangerous, but it turns out no.
No, it's good for you.
That's why I eat a lot of bacon.
Life.
Okay, here's something that we've discovered. We have found, can you all help me describe this, a picture of this?
Looks like a beautiful tea box.
This is
a humidor.
Spice box.
Oh, it looks like a humidor. It's a great description, Alex. This is a box that came in the mail. And it's wooden. It's very light. I think it's kind of balsa. And beautiful carved letters on the top, "Pinch this spices."
Wow.
And you open up the box, and there are these little divisions inside the box. And in each little box inside the box, there are 1 teaspoon packets of spice.
Wow. Huh.
And we have this posted at foodschmooze.org, how to get to this. The idea with this is somebody's invention. Pinch this is you get 1 teaspoon measurements of every single spice. It was so many kinds of spices, and they have lists of a million. They're very fresh. You've all smelled how this smelled with this coming out of it. Amazing. When you run out of a particular category, you just scan the little teeny packet, the barcode, on your phone, and in the mail, it comes right back to you.
I love that part.
That's so cool.
And like each of these little spice packets of 1 teaspoon each is 99 cents.
Wow.
That's great. And, they're fresh, and
so
that's the key.
That's what you need
fresh,
in spice.
Right?
Yeah. So say what you mean about that, Chris.
Yeah, the fresher they are, the more strength they have. And if you've had a container of, I don't know, let's say coriander seeds in your cabinet like I have for, I don't know, 6 months to a a year, and they sat in the supermarket for 6 months to a year, and then in the
or
warehouse.
Two.
Yeah,
in the warehouse.
Yeah, and as they get older, the strength goes away,
yeah.
And they sort of lose everything. I tell people this story all the time. We switched spice companies at the restaurant, and the first day we did it, we didn't even think about it. We made our mashed potatoes like we always did, same recipe, and we couldn't eat them. The pepper was so strong. And
wow.
We only put a little white pepper
wow.
in it.
Yeah.
But the old white pepper, we had to use X amount. And this, we ended
it's
up
like
using
sawdust.
Yeah, using half the amount. The strength really does, or the freshness makes such
There's
a huge
There's something
difference.
So inspiring and yeah. encouraging about getting a spice where when you take off the lid or open the packet like these,
yeah.
this incredible aroma. Mm. I mean, it's just pouring out of this box when I open the lid. This box is the starter kit. So you can order the starter kit,
that.
And then you just scan on your phone. Because you download the app and boom, you're off and running, and you just never
yeah.
run out of the spices.
Yeah. And the ones the ones you use the most,
you buy
get
more
like
of.
Four of or five of, and the ones you use the less, you could have one in reserve, right? It's a great idea.
This is posted
yeah.
on our
Wish
website.
I would have thought of it.
At
yeah, I know.
it's such a great
Me
idea.
Me too. I was
Any cook would love this.
Need a time
Absolutely.
Machine.
It's posted at foodschmooze.org right now. Can we talk as a group about sheet pan dinners before we get to dumplings in a little while for Chinese New Year? Sheet pan dinners, this is like the new kale. There's a lot of talk about this. I don't know who started it. It could be Food 52, but somebody started this thing, and now I'm excited.
Mm-hmm. It was some busy mom.
Was it?
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Throw it all in one pan. Check it in the oven. I got to go.
Salt, pepper.
All right. So you know, the whole idea is that you chop up your various vegetables.
Yeah.
The protein part, what I call the meat part,
yeah.
whether it's chicken or pork, you slice that thin and you put that in with the mix. You could add some spices or not, but you toss it all in olive oil and then it goes into the oven. That's a sheet pan dinner. You stir a couple times, you're done. And I think it's a wonderful way to cook.
Absolutely.
Foil line the sheet pan and there's not even any cleanup.
There you go. I love it.
And if you
I
have a convection it. Oven, turn it on and speeds things up, right?
That's
As
right.
we learned.
It cooks evenly.
So Chris, I've always wondered this. When you put down foil, does the foil prevent the browning?
Nope. No.
What about parchment paper? Is that the same?
Parchment paper is about the same. I like foil because it conducts heat.
That makes sense. Yeah.
That makes sense.
But
okay.
If
and you can make a packet, too. If it's getting too brown, you can sort of roll it up and tent it and steam it a little bit.
I just like the idea. The one thing you have to really watch is that everything cooks the same. So if you have things that cook a little faster, you cut them a little larger.
Right.
And if you have things that cook a little slower, you cut them smaller. And then hopefully everything gets done at the same time. That's
so
the key.
I went to one site, Food 52, and they were saying you can add fruit, too. So one person that I read said, I like to add grapes to Brussels sprouts. Those things actually taste delicious together. So she's chopping up her Brussels sprouts, throwing them in the pan, and then tossing in grapes.
Yeah.
And so you've got fruit and vegetables and protein if you want it or don't want it.
Pork and pineapple.
You could add
That's
nuts.
I like Brussels sprouts with bacon and walnuts. Those
two
are
a good combination.
Absolutely delicious.
It's one of my favorites, too.
I like what Alex said. I would do ham and pineapple.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Right?
So I cook chicken Chris's way, low and slow. So just last night I do chicken thighs, salt and pepper, a little olive oil, garlic, and then cut up a beet and some new potatoes and goes in and, you know, and forget about it. And then it's so good.
I love, you know, lamb tends to be expensive with the specific type of chops or the T-bone. But there's certain times where you can get lamb chops that are like the shoulder cuts that are a little less expensive. And they're probably maybe a half inch thick cut. You lay those on and I do some shaved fennel, rosemary, garlic, and some potatoes.
Oh.
And it's just.
That's a good
Do you do it as a sheet pan thing?
One sheet pan thing, All roasted together.
So they told me, I've started reading about this like crazy, and somebody said, you know, at the last minute, you could do actually the whole thing under the broiler. Chris, maybe you can explain that, because I thought at the last minute, I would take my sheet pan and just run it under the broiler for a few minutes, and so things had a crispness, a caramelization.
But you can do the whole thing under the broiler. You just have to be very careful and watch it, right?
Right.
No, you just
you're going to burn it.
Yeah, it would go a lot faster is the thing, right?
Yeah.
Because you have a lot more intense heat, so you would move the stuff around a lot more.
And you could
take
flip
it
once,
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's like
you're
stir-frying.
Moving
it,
I'm moving
it in
and out a
lot more. Are you saying if you put it only under the broiler, not in the oven, that it would not burn before it cooked?
Mm-hmm. Lower the rack?
Or just move it around a lot faster,
How far from the top? Where would your rack be?
I take it down one rung. But you still want to be close to the broiler because that's how you're...
In that
intense heat, that cooks it differently than in the oven,
right? Do you
keep
the door open or closed?
Always keep the door open when I broil.
And then how much? Just a few inches in that position?
Yeah, that first
And why
click
do you do
is.
That?
Because it can get too hot because that's
smell
full
the
board.
Smoke quicker.
Yeah, that's full board. And again, you want to be there when you broil. You want to be there, right?
Yeah.
You want to be there. And
you don't walk away from it. Yeah,
because things burn quickly. But if you move stuff around, you'll cook it very fast.
So I like to tell a story on myself that I've burned $10,000 worth of nuts in the course of my life, maybe more. Mm-hmm. So Robin, I'm saying, because I know you like to use nuts too in your cooking, I put the nuts in almost at the end of cooking because they burn so fast. So here's another place where I would burn nuts, you know, where I just absolutely ruin them. So, Chris, when would you put them in?
First of all, I never broil nuts anymore because I'm with you. I've burned thousands of dollars worth of nuts.
They just
I
burn
only
too
put
fast.
Them in the oven. Yeah, they just, you blink and they're gone. I don't know what it is, right? Time stops in your head and you're like, oh, I have plenty of. And then the smoke's pouring out
of it. They're kind of like firewood in a
way. So
exactly.
I never,
kindling.
Ever. And if anything, I'm the type of guy that will do them on the stovetop and then add them after.
That's right.
Just because I'm
that's
you.
A really good
idea. Yeah, because I'm like you. I don't know what it is. Just certain things I burn. That's one of them. You can't help it. Even when I do them in the oven, I forget. And then all of a sudden, there's puffs of smoke coming out of
Even
the
though
oven.
I'm standing watching because I said, don't get distracted.
It.
And so I stare at them.
Staring competition.
It's still possible to burn
my staff. My staff has a thing where they yell squirrel, and that's how I am.
So here's now I'm going to tell you how to turn that roasted vegetable sheet pan into a soup.
Oh, nice.
And this is not my idea. A very good friend of mine, Dawn Hosevar, who lives in Branford, Connecticut, in Stony Creek, she did this, and I was over to dinner, and I was so impressed. The soup was so delicious that it was a meal. So what she did was take a bunch of root vegetables of all kinds, toss them in some olive oil, put that sheet pan into the oven, let it roast for a while. You know, took her spoon in and tossed them a little bit. As soon as they were quite cooked and looked good to her and just touched them with a fork and said, yes, those are really cooked. She then put it into a bowl. And she said, now, I'm going to put this in my blender or food processor to make soup. Now, what do I want to do? She thought, I've used a little bit of olive oil. Some recipes would say butter, you know, plus olive oil. But she said, I don't want the butter. I want the olive oil. Okay, good so far. She put salt and pepper on it. Fine. Most recipes would tell you to add heavy cream to something like that to make soup.
Yeah.
And she said, she thought to herself, I don't want to have heavy cream. Okay. What can I do? She tossed
half
in soft tofu.
Oh.
Sure.
Dumped it in the processor in batches for each bowl. And
that's
what
the protein,
came
too.
Out, yes. What came out was this
silky,
thick, wonderful soup.
Wow.
Oh, my God. It was
no liquid,
fantastic.
No water, chicken stock?
No.
You don't need
it
because the soft tofu is quite watery.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, you don't need it. And it's got a silky consistency.
And
when
so
it's
it becomes very stew-like.
Just like cream.
Hmm.
Huh. Yeah. So, Alex, if you took that tofu and put it in the blender by itself and pureed it, you would end up with stuff that looks like a really thick cream.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. The only thing that I would think to do, and I didn't think it at the time because I thought it was perfect, so I'm not in any way criticizing her because I thought this is a fabulous idea. I might have, because I like to do that, I would have put some sprinkled toasted nuts on the top.
Oh, to give it a little crunchiness.
Just because,
nuts.
Or if you want to keep it, like true to that, some seeds.
And I would have burned the soup,
pumpkin
too.
Pumpkin seeds or sunflower seeds. Yeah, toasted. I like that.
Good
on
idea.
That kind of soup.
So, Robin, you have a thing about, instead of pinoli, what do you use?
All right.
Sunflower seeds a lot of times.
I like that idea.
And so I borrowed your idea the other day and toasted them, then started eating them by the handful. And I thought, you know, these are just as good as pinoli. I can't believe it. And half the price.
I mean, spring for guests, you know, definitely. But for yourself, it's good.
That is so kind of you. See, that's very good. All right, this is what I've been waiting to tell you. It is a Faith Middleton Food Schmooze signature event, our heart-to-heart champagne dinner dance. The week of Valentine's Day, top chefs are going to create a night in Italy, amazing dishes paired with luscious wines. That's February 9th at 6 p.m. at the River House at Goodspeed Station. Thanks to our presenting sponsor, UConn Health Calhoun Cardiology Center, with support from The River House, Fascia's Chocolates, and Power Station Events. This sells out every year because where can you dine and dance and have a wine dinner on top of it?
Mm-hmm. It is. The food is knock your socks off.
It is.
Yeah. I still remember the salmon from last year.
I do too. I do too. Okay, so this time a night in Italy, and so we've got an Italian spin on things, which everybody loves. And, you know, after our trip to Italy, we thought this would really be fun to do. So if you want to surprise somebody or just say, here's what we're going to do, the week of Valentine's Day, this will be our special splurge. Everything, of course, benefits WNPR. For reservations, you can go to foodschmooze.org to find it. But the official site is WNPRhearttoheart.org. WNPR, that's our station name, hearttoheart.org. We're going to celebrate Chinese New Year and tell you how to make dumplings, Chinese dumplings, at home. More mouthwatering conversation and fun ahead on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. I hope you will make a charitable contribution to feed the hungry among us. We're online now at foodschmooze.org, and we'll be right back.
Beans. Cornbread said, now that's all right. Beans. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night.
I'll be ready. I'll be ready tomorrow night. Beans. I'll be ready. I'll be ready tomorrow night. Beans. I'll be ready. I'll be ready tomorrow night.
That's what Beans said to Cornbread.
We have a free podcast for you, meaning you'll never miss a drop of pleasure on this show. You just sign up for it once at our site, and then we automatically send you our show. Just go to our site, foodschmooze.org, put in your email address. You look at your phone or your device, and you just say, hey, oh my God, there's the show. Yep. I'm with my treasured food buddies, Chris Prosperi, chef and co-owner of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, wine brokers Alex Province of Hartford, and Mark Raymond of Wethersfield. Should we start with the wines at an incredible price? We've got two wines for you. These are great.
Delicious, aren't they?
With Asian foods. But just for drinking around the table, weeknight wines, $10 a bottle. Let's start with the rosé. Let's pour a little of this rosé into the glass. There we go. Mark Raymond, this is from...
So this is from Finca El Origen in Argentina, the Uco Valley. And this is a rosé of Malbec.
Wow. I don't think I've ever had a Malbec.
And I'll tell you what, this is...
Wow, that's delicious.
It's got some backbone to it.
It really does. It has some good, steady...
Talk about food wine. You know,
fruit to it. I love it.
Yeah.
The rosé is actually just the first press, so it doesn't get any skin contact, so it's a very pale, pale pink.
Beautiful, though.
And it's got beautiful dry...
You mean they don't put any skin in the mix?
They don't let the skins...
Marinate.
Marinate. With, right. touch
then
the
where
juice.
Where does the pink come from?
Just that little skin contact as they're crushing the grapes.
Oh, yeah. it squeezes
so longer,
out a little.
The longer out, it sits, right. The darker red it gets.
It becomes.
So these are handcrafted in the old school way. They're not adding junk to the wine.
Absolutely. Correct.
Wow.
This is the first 2016 rosé I've had of the year.
See?
Wow.
There
and
you
it's
go.
It's a good one to start with.
And the price is unbelievable.
Yeah.
$10 a bottle.
$10 a bottle.
That's amazing.
Yeah. You just can't beat this. So
I want it to be summer again.
You can't.
I know.
This is on our website right now.
You can drink rosé all year round, though.
I do.
You really can.
These from South America, from Italy and Spain, I'm just in love with them, and they all are slightly different from each other. They're at a great price point often, although there are a few that are very
expensive.
Very expensive. French ones, Tavel. And so this one is a steal. Finca El Origen. a Malbec rosé made in Argentina. Go to foodschmooze.org to get the details, a picture. Take this to your wine store or call ahead and make sure they'll get it for you in 24 hours, as we explain on the site.
Absolutely.
It has so much flavor, though. You
it
know,
really
sometimes
does.
Rosés are sort of like watery. This is just
rich.
Mouthful of
smacking.
That's the Malbec, right?
Yeah. It goes with so many different things. Dumplings are great with this. You know, Asian food. I love it with Spanish food, Mexican food.
Like gambas al ajillo, some shrimp and
absolutely.
Olive oil and garlic.
And
calamaris a la plancha with roasted garlic. Oh.
I don't know if I'm different from other people or those of you here on the show, but I will have a rosé that has a richness or a body to it like this one with anything on my table, including a steak.
Yeah.
Maybe not spaghetti with red sauce. But anything on my table, I would have it with pork, with chicken,
salad.
With fish, with salad. Alex, your wonderful idea.
Salad with
eggs
protein.
And brunch.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, with these rosés, I will put them in an ice bucket. I'll even flash them in the freezer because the colder they are, the more I like them.
Me too.
And even in the winter, I feel that it's this kind of bracing, fresh thing when people are coming in the door. If you're having a party, people coming over for the weekend, for anything, how can you miss at $10 a bottle? And if you ordered something like this by the case, what does that make it? What is it, $9, $8 a bottle? And it's not junk. It's really good.
It's such a good wine for $10.
It really is. It's a nice wine.
God. Okay, thrilling. Go to foodschmooze.org. I'm excited about that. Who do we want to thank? Our cookbook digital
Our
editors.
Our heroes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so Paula Pierce and Jason Black. They are the people entering all the recipes that we're putting on the site. We just can't thank them enough. We couldn't resist. We like to do one wine at a time, but I got to tell you, our next wine, because it is also $10 a bottle.
That's our hot spot today.
We're all still paying off our Christmas bills.
That's
so
right.
That's what we need.
That's right.
And Robin's going to tell us about a reset, you know, on calories for thanks to Chinese New Year. Maybe that's our new
like
starting
it.
It's a
point.
Bigger bathing suit.
Okay, this is a wine. It is a Sauvignon Blanc. It does have that forward kind of citrus grapefruity kind of thing in it. And it goes with Asian food so well. Anything that has a little heat or spice, it can go well with seafood.
Yeah.
So this is a Sauvignon Blanc. It's Chilean. The Santa, it looks like Carolina to us.
Yeah.
Santa Carolina is how we would say it. This vineyard has been around since 1875. Mark,
that's
this
cool.
is a great thing to recommend.
Yeah.
Last year they were, or 2 years ago, they were New World Winery of the Year. What does that mean when they call a place New World?
So we think of the Old World wines from Europe. And so the New World wines would be, you know, South America, Australia, Chile,
here to
Argentina,
some extent?
The United States, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of the Western culture.
Okay, so that's what we mean. And this Santa Carolina Sauvignon Blanc is from the Leda Estate?
Yep, from the Leda Valley, which is a really great place to get Sauvignon Blanc. And that's what I love about this winery is they're really about the sense of place, growing the right grapes in the right valleys.
So
and they get the same type of fog in this area,
so
just sort of like they do in that
Central Coast.
Yeah, in the Napa Valley. And Central Coast there.
And they have a reverse season, right? Our summer,
Southern
winter,
Hemisphere.
Summer,
exactly.
Summer.
So they're a half a season ahead of us.
That's
so
cool.
Why we were talking about the rosé being 2016, because they harvested this in March of 16. So now, here we are in the 16.
I remember reading years ago that when there's fog and that humid ocean moisture in the air, when the grapes are growing near that, plus the wind in the soil, but that's what's giving the aromatics to the grapes and then therefore to the wine. Is that right?
There's some truth to that. And then another thing that it does Yeah, there's truth to that. But it also helps cool it down because you get such hot afternoons there. They need that extra time to kind of cool the grapes down.
Okay.
And as that fog burns off, the day heats up, and then that cool comes back in at night.
The other benefit is that they're able to grow grapes more organically there because the dry air keeps everything pest-free and fungus-free. So these guys are growing on pristine land in South America that, you know, it's just recently been planted. And that's how they do it for so inexpensively, because the land, you know, if you go to Napa, I forget, what's the value of an acre? I mean, hundreds of thousands of dollars or something per acre.
Yeah,
you know, so we were just talking about how hard it is on vineyards now in many places, but these regions Mark is singling out, they're more fortunate in terms of the price of the land and can afford to do excellent wine at this price.
Absolutely.
But now in France and Italy, maybe some places in Spain, certainly in certain places in America, Oregon, the land prices and especially the taxes now on the land, people can't afford to keep the vineyards anymore, and they have to price the wine so high. What are people thinking?
Yeah.
So we talk about, like, if you're going to drink wholesomely at a price. I know people on Facebook were asking for $10 wines that we recommend.
Yeah.
This is it.
These two are
absolutely
it. And they are right now posted at Food Schmooze, S-C-H like school, Food Schmooze. .org. We'll also post them on Facebook at Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. I have to say, I'm a rosé fan, and this Finca rosé from Malbec grapes from Argentina at $10 a bottle is unbelievable.
What a steal, right?
I'm crazy for it.
What a steal.
So good.
Really, really,
we're going to have
really
some fun with this spring.
Or now.
A few parties.
I mean, okay, can I skip over to something that is kind of a crazy idea? I'm trying to increase the amount of water that I drink. You know, water's not that interesting to me, and I think, come on, is this really important to be hydrated? So I'm in the process of doing that, and last week we had a wine. I was sitting, and there was just a half inch in the glass, and I looked at it, and something went click in my head, and I went to the hot water tank. I put hot water in the glass, and what I'd made was a red wine tea. I sipped it to taste how it was, and it was delicious.
Really? Interesting.
It's the reverse of the spritzer, where you add club soda to a particular wine.
Yeah.
It's not so alcoholic, and yet it's refreshing because it's cold. This
I could
red
see that
wine
being soothing.
It was lovely. It's not as high in alcohol. Most people would make a toddy from high alcohol spirits.
Yeah.
This was just a half inch to an inch of wine, or less, depending on your
spices.
And topped it with the wine.
Not
and
a spice in it, and topped it with very hot water. So anyone who would like to try Middleton's wine tea, I invite you to try it.
You can put it in a teapot.
Very warming by the fire, honestly. Just
a little
really
teacup.
Fun. Give it a try.
I'm going to try
you
that.
You could add spices. What would you add?
Cardamom.
People?
Yeah, sure. Cinnamon.
Cardamom? Cinnamon? That's good. There's something like that.
Yeah, like
that
mold wine.
It should be mold
wine.
See, I was trying to stay away from doing a recipe that exists and just doing something instant. Low alcohol, but was warming. Just really fun.
Huh.
Okay, so Robin, as we're coming up to our segment on Chinese New Year, which is right now, Year of the Rooster.
Yeah, it's perfect for people who maybe have not followed through on their New Year's resolutions that they make around, you know,
January 1st. Ones?
Right, it's a reset. So you celebrate over January 1st and you come up with the, you know, 5 or 10 things on your list that you want to improve or do better.
New Year's 2.0.
That's right. And then like two weeks later, you're not exercising like you said you would. You've all fallen off the wagon in certain ways.
So you want to reset.
That's right.
That's it.
Chinese New Year is
this
here.
This Monday, as is our favorite phrase, this Monday after Chinese New Year, it begins.
That's right.
Does that mean the ellipticals at the gym are going to be full again?
Oh, yeah.
They're
starting everyone
for at least another week.
They just started going down a little bit, right? They just started going down where you could get one.
Yeah.
And now this will bring it right back up.
Thanks, Robin.
So what are our strategies? I'm just going to say, I mean, we're all about pleasure on the show. So here's what I think in the end. Everybody is different and every body needs some kind of...
Somebody.
You have to find...
That too.
Are you going to start singing?
People.
So There, every person needs a special way for that body to lose weight. But if there is a universal...
I'm still looking.
Yeah, I know. If there is a universal, it is try not to eat and drink late at night. That's the thing. So this is a good place to start. Some people say if you're going to try and have a rule, because people like to have rules, you don't eat later at night than you started breakfast. So if you start breakfast at 7 or
so
8 or 9,
don't eat past
you don't
seven,
eat,
eight,
you don't eat past that time. There
and
you go.
And you said drink
as
well?
Though. See, because, you know, I got to tell
all
you.
All the naysayer.
No, you
his
know,
arms are folded. Look, ready? Go ahead.
The Argentine culture, they don't go to dinner until 10, 11 o'clock at
but
night.
But they're up dancing until like 3
but
or 4.
I get it, they've
worked off dinner.
And they walk there.
They walk back. Just like they do
and...
all over Europe.
But listen,
I get it.
Argentine culture, not only Spanish,
no,
right?
Spanish culture. Yeah. It's Spain.
Italy.
Italian.
I mean, people go out to dinner so much later than we do.
But
we
they go home for a nap.
7 at the latest, you know? I mean, the restaurants are empty at 9 o'clock.
Saturday night in Simsbury, a late night is 10 o'clock. But it's not about eating late. It's about going to bed right after you eat.
So
that's the problem.
In Spain, they divide their day up into 3 8-hour blocks. So 8 hours of work, 8 hours of socializing, and 8 hours of sleep. Seems
well,
to work
fantastic.
For them.
Fantastic.
I hope my math is right. From 8 until midnight, you're out, and they stop on the pub on the way home, and they socialize there, and they stop at the pub midday.
Yeah,
they go
I can't
they socialize there. For, a
can't
beer at a tapa.
Yeah, I can't participate
it.
Here because of the 8 work thing. First of all, work is for me is what?
Yeah.
14 on a good
hours.
Day, maybe 16.
Yeah.
And then sleep on a good night is 4, maybe 5. That's
well,
all I can sleep.
You're a hard worker.
So
where
you are. So
work less.
Yeah. Well, so, no, am I supposed to agree with that? No, I don't think so. Okay.
Not
so,
you, Faith. Chris can work less.
No.
Oh, boy. Okay. Stay with us because we've got a dumpling celebration coming your way. We want to hear from you on Facebook about where your favorite dumpling places are. Let us know. It's Faith Middleton Food Schmooze on Facebook. We love the local. Please support your local food growers and food makers for on-demand podcast delivery of this show, The Food Schmooze Party, every week. And to find our terrific food, wine, cocktail, restaurant, hot topic subjects, our short, fun streaming videos, and the recipes we feature, we are always online talking with you at foodschmooze.org. Wine's there too. We'll be right back. This is the Food Schmooze Party, offering the richness of life and coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including Westchester County, the East End of Long Island, and that means the Hamptons, of course. The senior producer is Robin Doyon Aiken, and to hear the show on WNPR, it airs, as you probably know, Thursdays at 3 and Saturdays at noon. Podcasts and our curated recommendations are always online at foodschmooze.org. That's where everybody goes, and we love talking with you there and on Facebook. I'm with my treasured food buddies, Chris Brusberry, chef and co-owner of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, wine broker Alex Province of Hartford, wine broker Mark Raymond of Wethersfield, and here we go with our special guest because we are celebrating Chinese New Year, which is right now. Thank God we are done with the year of the fire monkey, is what I say. We are now turning into the year of the rooster, which somehow doesn't this seem like the year of the crowing rooster to you?
Enough said
about that. Because in celebration of dumplings, we want to thank, in New Haven, Junzi Kitchen, J-U-N-Z-I Kitchen. This is something that Robin coordinated for us. We've just had a great meal from them. And as we tell you, you about the Dumpling Galaxy Cookbook by Helen Yu. We want to make sure that you hear a little bit about what Junzi Kitchen is doing in New Haven.
So Junzi Kitchen is a sweet little takeout place over on Broadway near all the Yale shops that specializes in chun, bing, and noodles. Now, bing, if you've never had it, is almost like a burrito. The wrapper is flour and water, like a wonton or a dumpling wrapper, and rolled inside the wrap are soy marinated meats, like beef, pork, chicken. There's also tofu and vegetables. They're very fresh tasting. Think of it almost as like a long dumpling. It's not a pleated dumpling or a bao, a bun, but it's the flavors of a dumpling with shredded meats and or tofu and vegetables. They have a very yummy sort of roasted sesame sauce wrapped in with the filling or soy sauce, depending on what kind of bing you get. And they're very tasty. They make a very good lunch. We're thanking Chris, the chef, because he let me sneak in with my order, even though technically they weren't open yet. It was early this morning. So we really appreciate that.
This is a bunch of young people who got together and missed the taste of, was it Northern China?
Yes.
Yeah, they missed the taste of home in Northern China. And they are the greatest looking bunch of young people.
So adorable. A bunch of Yaleys.
Yeah, I mean, just fantastic. And so they've opened this place, Junzi Kitchen.
Must try.
We're excited really about them. Very affordable.
And fun. Right?
And I tried something new. I learned about bings.
Yeah. And I had a rice noodle bowl, which I loved. Yeah. It was terrific. So this was our way in the studio on the show to celebrate Chinese New Year, which is right now Year of the Rooster. And also to do that, we went to this new cookbook. It's called The Dumpling Galaxy by Helen Yu. She is a chef and owner of Dumpling Galaxy and Tianjin Dumpling House in Flushing, Queens, where you can eat around the world in 5 minutes.
Oh,
it's the most stunning place to eat.
Love Flushing.
She has been praised all over the place, and she teamed up with Max Falkowitz, our guest. He's from Queens, and so he's grown up hunting dumplings and Indian dosas and likes this kind of food. He's also executive digital editor of Saveur Magazine, one of our favorites.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, Max, welcome to the Food Schmooze Party.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
You must eat around the world all the time in Queens, right?
That's what it meant to grow up in Queens, was to eat around it. That's what culture is. That's what walking down your building's hallway and trying to figure out what your neighbor's cooking and sort of sneaking in and asking if you can have a taste. And so that's been a very natural part of Queens life. And, you know, there are over 200 language groups in Queens, and every single one of them, that's what unites them.
And as a fellow Queens boy, I know exactly what you're saying. I grew up in Forest Hills, and it is exactly that.
Forest Hills.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, every building, every neighborhood. I think some of the best Chinese food in the country is in Queens.
Yeah, well, some of the best everything seems to be in Queens.
Oh, yeah.
Max, you make me want to move to Queens. I mean, we have some phenomenal places right here, but I want a little secret room somewhere in Queens. My resolution for the new year is to spend more time exploring restaurants in Queens.
I'm with you on that.
Including this Dumpling Galaxy. Let us ask you some questions about dumplings, also called pot stickers, correct?
Certain types of dumplings are called pot stickers. There's a lot of different names in Chinese, and to be honest, I don't know all of them because they also vary by region, which is to say, the same way there's that old joke about how Eskimos have 100 words for snow, which they don't, but roll with me here. Yeah. It's the same way with Chinese and dumplings, because there can't just be one word to describe something as perfect and as variable and as delicious as that.
So give us some courage. How hard is it to make dumplings at home?
So much easier than you think. And it's only as hard as you want to make it. In our book, we recommend that you start with your own homemade dumpling dough because we think it makes dumplings that are much, much, much better. A homemade dough is going to taste light. It's going to taste fresh. It's going to have a really delicate snap. And it's a really easy dough to make. But if it's a weeknight and you're not going to make that happen, and I'll be perfectly honest with you, I'm not making my own dumpling dough most time that I'm making dumplings. You can buy pre-made dumpling wrappers. They'll be a little different. They'll taste more like the wontons that you're used to eating, but better you have a dumpling with a store-bought dough than no dumpling at all.
Agreed.
Once you take the dough out of the equation, it's really just a matter of mixing together some meat and some vegetables and some seasonings. And if you time it right and you get your pot of water boiling before you get started, we we've gotten it down to about 30, 40 minutes if you have all of your ingredients prepped out and ready to go.
Max, great. I went to a party and someone was who does this all the time was making dumplings at home from scratch, gave us each a job. So in a way, it was a dumpling party. Some of us were scooping. She was rolling out the
dough. Assembly line.
It was the most crazy delicious. I suddenly realized what a revelation a homemade dumpling can be.
Fun party.
It's the best way to get your friends to help you cook your food for you at a party.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm telling you, you do dumplings at a party, even if you don't do it the way Faith said and you do them yourself, you look like a rock star. Wow, you made dumplings for us?
This is so crazy worldly. Easy. And we have the recipes we're about to talk about on our website, thanks to authors of the Dumpling Galaxy. Here's how easy it is to make a dumpling dough. This is easier than making a pie dough. A couple cups of flour, a little bit of salt, some lukewarm water, and an egg white. Honestly, people,
that's incredible.
That is it. And the same thing is true whether you're going to pan fry them, you're going to boil them, except if you're going to steam them, it's just flour and water.
Really?
So, yeah, this is the crazy easiest thing in the world to do. And then it becomes about the filling. That's what I can't wait to talk with you about, Max. One of my favorites would be a classic pork and chive dumplings. We have this on the site at foodschmooze.org. Let's talk about it, Max.
That is Helen's favorite dumpling to make. It's one of the most popular at her restaurant. When she started her dumpling stall, Tianjin Dumpling House, 10 years ago, that was one of the original menu items, and it remains incredibly popular because it's the classic, and you're not going to get any better than that.
Ground pork, a little bit of sherry cooking wine, freshly grated ginger, soy sauce, salt, garlic chives. So it's just all mixed together.
Yeah, you just mix it all together. And it's really about keeping those simple flavors really fresh and really vibrant. When we were working through the cookbook, I showed the recipes in development to some of my other Chinese friends whose parents make their own dumplings. And they would ask, where's the sugar in this? Where's the cornstarch? Where are all these spices that my mom was always adding? And I said, I don't know. Helen doesn't like using them. And it's because Helen really is a big believer in clean and pure flavors. And she really wants everything to taste fresh and bright and essential. And so that dumpling filling has everything you need and nothing you don't. And that's why she goes for that sherry cooking wine. It's a little bit sweeter than the Shaoxing wine that a lot of Southern Chinese use. You don't need to add any sugar. Make sure to get really good fresh ginger and grate it up to get all that juice in there.
Oh, yeah.
And that's going to make a dumpling that's going to taste light and beautiful and juicy, and it's not going to be heavy and greasy. That's what's so remarkable to me about the way Helen cooks, is that she's really kind of a health nut, which is not what you expect to find in a dumpling chef.
Where do you get garlic chives? Because our studio here in New Haven is just a half a block from a great Chinese supermarket. And we can go in and get garlic chives. Where do you advise people get them?
That's one of those ingredients that you are going to have to go to an Asian grocery for. Some really well-stocked major supermarkets might carry them, but those are generally ones that have larger Chinese or Korean communities. But if you don't live that close to an Asian grocery store, it's worth a drive to go to one. The chives, if you wrap them up tight in some damp paper towels and then wrap them up in plastic wrap, they'll keep for a while. They're fairly hardy. And the taste is really distinct. It has this beautiful, mellow, but deliciously stinky onion bite that it's totally different from European chives.
And every major city now has a little Chinese neighborhood that has stores. Don't you
Absolutely.
Think? Yeah, you can always find garlic chives anywhere.
What do you recommend that we're dipping these into, Max?
When I take people to Dumpling Galaxy, or when I take them anywhere around Flushing, what I first tell them, if we're going to a place that's known for its dumplings, don't dip them in anything at all. Take a bite first, and if your dumpling is really well made, it shouldn't need anything.
Right.
But that said, eventually you're going to want a dipping sauce. In the cookbook, we have three. One of them is a really simple mix of soy sauce and black vinegar with some aromatics.
Black vinegar.
My favorite is this really, really simple, very potent mix of minced garlic, water, and a drop of lemon juice. And you take like a whole head of garlic and you mince it up really fine, and you just let it sit in water and let it rest for a couple of days in the fridge. And it's this really beautiful palate cleansing. It adds this really bright note to the dumplings without covering up the natural flavors of the meat and the vegetables with more soy sauce.
I like that. I really want to try that one.
That's your raw garlic sauce. That sounds
awesome.
So these things are available in any supermarket: soy sauce, rice vinegar, sugar, and minced garlic. Mm. Now, the next thing we have on the site from your book, The Dumpling Galaxy, same name as the restaurant in Queens, cookbook by Helen Yu with Max Falkowitz, who also grew up in Queens. 8 vegetable dumplings. So for people who don't want to have meat or before the main course in a Chinese restaurant, try and go a little vegetable-centric, whatever your thing might be. Let me just run through this, Max. Chopped Napa cabbage, frozen corn kernels, grated carrots, canned chopped bamboo shoots, chopped bok choy. That's the fresh stuff right there. The celery is fresh, wood ear mushrooms, chopped broccoli, toasted sesame oil, kosher salt, black pepper, and there you go. You've got this beautiful filling.
Helen picks the number 8. 8 is a number with a lot of ritual significance in Chinese culture, and those are the vegetables that she likes, but if you want to swap out any of them for what you have in your fridge, go for it. It's a really flexible recipe. And if you mix them all together well, that sesame oil gives it a bit of depth and body. Mm. But what's happening as the dumplings cook is all of those vegetables just sort of meld their flavors together and form this little miniature broth right inside the dumpling.
That sounds
and it's
so
a dumpling
good.
That's so
I'm hungry.
I know. It's so juicy that when you bite in, it's a spurter. Like I always tell people at Dumpling Galaxy, don't wear white when you come here.
Or do wear white so you can bleach it. This is not on our site, but I just have to mention it. Lamb and cilantro dumplings. Now, some people don't like lamb. Some people don't like cilantro. Lamb. But if you are a fan of both those things, I just went nuts when I saw this. Here we go. Chris, were you going to jump in and say something?
I just like the simplicity of it. But that last one, the only really seasoning in there is the sesame oil.
Yeah.
And then all the vegetables really take center stage.
Who in the world in China came up with this idea of sesame oil? It is one of the best flavors on earth, I think. Some genius figured out, let me taste this oil after I crush these sesame seeds and see what this is like. Here's a dumpling that is so unusual. I've never thought of this combination. Salmon and dill dumplings. It would almost like be salmon and dill sitting on top of pasta, you know, almost in a Nordic kind of way. So here
sounds
we have
great.
It inside. So scallion, fresh grated ginger, salmon that is chopped up. If you've got leftover salmon, what a thing to make. Sherry cooking wine, oyster sauce and soy sauce right from the supermarket, pepper, some fresh dill. The fresh dill is the key to this. Go ahead,
Max. Such an interesting combination, right?
If you make it with a little chopped up lox, It's not terrible.
Oh.
The story of this dumpling was, so Helen and I were working with our recipe tester, Amy, for 5 very feverish months, and that involved a lot of late nights. And Helen averages about 2 to 3 hours of sleep a night, because between the 2 restaurants and the book and her 3 kids and everything else that she has going on, she's just constantly up. So we had a lot of late night conversations, and we were talking through some recipes, and we were talking through what we needed to include. And she said, Max, I've been thinking about doing a dumpling with salmon and dill. And I've also been thinking about doing this dumpling. And it's like, no, wait. Go back for a second. Talk to me about this. She says, yes, you take salmon and you add dill and you add some aromatics and then you put it in a dumpling and it'll be great. And that's how she operates. This is a woman who, ever since she got to this country, has been playing with the ingredients that she can find here.
She's not
a slave to tradition. She's really a tinkerer. And salmon is not an ingredient you find much in Chinese cooking, but she loves it. Dill, however, is an ingredient you find a lot in Chinese cooking, especially in northern China, where Helen is from, in the city of Tianjin. And it's a beautiful combination. It's the kind of thing that I would serve at brunch.
I was going to say, brunch sounds great.
Yeah, and add a little caviar, too, and some sour cream, and it's also not terrible.
Yeah.
I just want to add, in this year of the crowing rooster in the new Chinese calendar, Happy Chinese New Year, by the way. How much gratitude do we have to immigrants who've come to this country and not only brought us the food of their lands, but adapted it and incorporated and come up with new things based on, just as Helen Yu is doing, how lucky are we, if you love food and culture, to have this in our midst? It's just...
It's a story of American food, yeah, right there.
That's exactly. It.
That is it. That is American food.
Really, just thank you all. Thank you all. I mean, my people came here from someplace else. I know everybody on the show, that's true. So,
yeah.
Max, you're a terrific guest. And
well, thank you. You're terrific hosts.
Oh, so love to have you here. And please tell Helen Yu for us. We're so grateful she's done this book, The Dumpling Galaxy Cookbook. It's also the name of her restaurant in Queens. And we are real dumpling fans.
And she'll be seeing us in a restaurant soon.
Yes, she will.
Road trip road to road Queens.
Trip. Road trip. I'm coming right up.
Don't eat breakfast.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you know what? I'm going to get 1,000 emails. Does she ever do them gluten-free?
You know, that's a tricky one because the dumpling dough has so few ingredients in it. It's it's tricky to get it to bind. But what I would say is that if you have a gluten-free mix that you're really happy with, whether that's cup for cup flour or something else, something that you use for bread, give it a shot. It's something I can't say that we've tested, but it's a simple enough dough that it's worth trying out. Everyone knows what a good dumpling wrapper should be like, and so you'll have a pretty quick sense of whether or not it would work for you.
And there's also einkorn flour, which would make a kind of crunchy dough, which would be great. Mm. Thank you, Max. We're on WNPR Thursdays at 3 and Saturdays at noon. Weekdays, listen for my 60-second food schmoozes. We have all the recipes we've talked about and information about the book at foodschmooze.org. You know our slogan, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton. Thanks for listening to the podcast on your schedule. And when you need a little party in your life, we're here and online all the time at foodschmooze.org. And of course, also on Facebook at Faith Middleton Food Schmooze.